gripped away so violently she'd lost some teeth with it. But she didn't feel it right now. Numb and in shock, the only thing she could do was get away. Hands grabbed her ankles. She screeched and dug her fingers into the grass. The hands dragged her back into the house through the sliding glass doors on the patio. The doors slammed shut, and the screaming stopped. Chapter 2. Assistant Special Agent in Charge, Kyle Vidal, strolled through the basement halls of the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit in Quantico, Virginia. The linoleum floors and off-white walls echoed his footsteps under the outdated fluorescent lighting. He was walking toward the cries of two women. The door's nameplate read, Screening. Inside, two men sat at a desk. Behind the desk was Special Agent Mickey Parsons. Kyle didn't recognize the man with the guest badge pinned to his chest on the other side. Between them, a Mac played a recording on a media player. Mickey noticed him and turned it off. The man wiped tears from his eyes and said, I didn't know things like that actually happened. He stood, thanked Mickey, and left. You're not going to escort him out? Kyle asked. No, I don't think he's going to be stealing anything. Kyle sat down across from him. What was that? He's an actor. He just got a pilot, and he's playing a criminal profiler. Wanted to get a feel for it. I let him listen to a recording three 17-year-old boys made a few years ago. They rear-ended a mentally disabled woman and her mother, and when they got out to check the damage, they gang-raped them in the middle of the street. When they were done, they shot him in the face. They recorded the whole thing on their cell phones. I remember that case. The mother died because no one stopped to help them when she was bleeding out. He paused. Little much, don't you think? He said he wanted authentic, so I gave him authentic. He closed the Mac. Those boys were just kids. I don't understand this younger generation coming up. I thought everyone had an angle, but I don't think this generation does. It's destruction for destruction's sake. But what the hell do I know? I'm just an old man sitting in a basement. Kyle checked his own tie for spots. How you feeling? Fine. How you really feeling, Mickey? He said, lifting his eyes to Mickey's. You want me to say I feel like I'm dying of AIDS, Kyle? Because I don't. The med's going okay? If you can stand the headaches, fainting, nausea, and constipation, then yeah, they're going fine. Kyle adjusted a photograph on Mickey's desk and then rose. I just wanted to check up on you, make sure you don't need anything. I'm fine. I appreciate it, though. He was about to say something, but chose not to. Instead, he nodded and stepped out of the office. Mickey leaned back in his chair as Kyle left. His head throbbed and his feet were so swollen he had to take off his shoes. Files and several bins of paper filled his messy office. He glanced at his desktop as he put the Mac away. He had 112 unread emails. He opened a drawer and took out several amber bottles. Mickey placed them on his desk before retrieving his water bottle with the red ribbon, signifying it was his. Anything he ate or drank out of at the Bureau had to have a red ribbon placed on it. It was considered voluntary policy. But Mickey had never felt it was voluntary. He first swallowed his Vireed, and then the Emtriva, and finished it off with a Sustiva. The drugs helped reduce the amount of HIV in the blood and slowed the progress of the disease, though nothing could stop it. He had heard of a single case where a child tested positive was found to test negative some months later after a rigorous medication cocktail regimen. Mickey searched for all the information available about this child, but found nothing other than a few articles here and there. He couldn't guess why it wasn't bigger news. The pills went down hard. The doctor had suggested he switch to a Tripla, a single-pill cocktail. He would try it soon.